Hello, everyone. My name is Dr. Cindy Burnett.
And my name is Dr. Matthew Werwood.
This is the Fueling Creativity Podcast.
On this show, we'll be talking about creativity topics and how they apply to the field of education.
We'll be speaking with scholars, educators, and resident experts about their work, challenges they face, and digging deeper into new and varying perspectives of creativity.
All with the goal to help fuel a more rich and informed discussion that provides teachers and parents with knowledge they can use at home or in the classroom.
So let's begin.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Fueling Creativity Podcast. This is one of those bonus episodes where we don't have a guest and it's just a discussion between myself and Cindy Burnett. And guess what? This episode is dedicated to the holiday season where we're going to be talking about traditions and activities that we can do to promote creative thinking during the holidays. And of course, we will be touching on the type of gifts that we feel can be good for promoting or facilitating creativity. So, Cindy, without further ado, why don't you start off with a conversation that we were having just before the show that it's we have to remind ourselves it's not about the gifts.
No, Matt, it's not about the gifts. It's about those memories that we want to make with our children and our students. And in this episode, we are really coming at this from a parent perspective in terms of gifts that you might get your child, but it's really about the memory. So let's talk about connecting with your children over the holidays, because sometimes, you know, we always see those typical Christmas movies or holiday movies that talk about, you know, the true meaning of Christmas. And I think actually the true meaning of whatever it is that you might celebrate in December and early January and maybe the new year is around making memories with your family. And it's such a great time to turn things off and make some memories. And I don't think there's a better time to make those memories and create things together. So let's talk a little bit about that, Matt. What do you create with your boys and your family during the holidays that might make meaning for you?
I really appreciate having the opportunity to answer this question because I want to say, I think my eldest, who's now 10, was about 3-4 years old. And I noticed that he really liked to draw and paint. And, you know, perhaps it might be the fact that I'm coming from the UK, but I was always a little bit uncomfortable with the whole holiday card with the happy family type thing. Because I can tell you that my family's not always happy. Sometimes it's an absolute disaster. And so what I wanted to do is capture a sense of our family, our personality. And I think a big part of that personality was, you know, my youngest who loved to draw, loved to paint, liked to make messes. And what I had him do was paint a picture of our Christmas tree next to the fireplace with the stockings. And it was that kind of like wonderful, picturesque holiday image. And then I went to, I think it was Vistaprint, and I kind of had that image turned into a Christmas card, and that kind of went out. And everyone kind of really liked it. So I did it the following year as well. And that has now become a tradition around the holidays. We actually do it the weekend after Thanksgiving because we need the turnaround in terms of the time. I've developed some tips and tricks around that by making some mistakes along the way. But it is now an event where the whole family comes together. And so I've snapped some pictures. I have shared, I think, a couple of stories on my Dads for Creativity blog. And we've all got our own stations. We're all making our own picture. And so I've now got my youngest, who's now 4. I've got my middle guy who is 7, and I've got my eldest who's now 10. And we have these collections of cards now every single year. And that is one of my stories that I wanted to share today because it's about the holidays, it's about coming together, and it's about creating and making.
Love it. What a great story, Matt. In our family, we do a gingerbread competition every year. And locally, we started about 4 years ago. There's a culinary arts place that has a competition, and they have all different age ranges and levels. And my kids have created their own gingerbread houses. And that's sort of what we do over the Thanksgiving holiday. And 1 year, they wanted to make a Minecraft gingerbread house. And so I bought these molds of little squares and we made gingerbread and chocolate and icing, all of these little squares. And they made this massive live Minecraft gingerbread house. And it didn't win an award, but it did get the most creative of the whole competition.
Oh, fantastic.
So, you know, what I would encourage our listeners to do is think about traditions you might start with each other. And they could be as simple as, you know, we really enjoy doing puzzles together as a family. And here's a really funny creativity tip that I learned recently, which is if you go to the same company and buy two boxes of puzzles that are the same amount of pieces, so say they're 200 pieces, you can mix and match some of the pieces in and out of one another's puzzle. So it can be half of one puzzle and half of the other puzzle. And you can mix those together, which is really fun. And we've done, and I'll actually link in our notes, some really amazing pictures that have been done with those puzzles. But also just, you know, having a game night. And actually in our house, we have a game night that's make your own rules. So if we're playing a game like Trouble, we will encourage the kids to make up a new rule or multiple rules. I've actually made a video on this that I'll also link in our notes that, you know, if you're playing Monopoly, if you land on one of the railroads, then you get to steal someone else's card, you know, property. And how much does that change the game? And how does one rule change the whole nature of the game? So we spend a lot of time creating our own rules around games, which is great fun.
We're going to get later in the show talk a little bit about gifts, but I do want to just highlight that I, particularly when the children were younger, I would add jigsaw puzzles to as a gift under the tree because it did bring us together. And of course, it's a nice problem-solving activity. And then over the last few years, I have been having kind of like a family gift, which is typically a board game. So I think last year we did Guess Who. And if anyone's listening out there, I just want to say Guess Who is a brilliant game. I mean, I've got really high energetic boys. And only just recently this week, my youngest who's four said, I want to play Guess Who. And he got the game out and he set it all up. Even if you're not necessarily changing the rules per se, engaging the young ones in those games, it does facilitate those problem-solving skills and a whole bunch of other learning skills. And then, of course, if you add the fact that you change the rules on top of that, and it becomes a really, really exciting, fun activity. So I think we've kind of already begun to reference a couple of gifts that, you know, don't bust the bank per se, but gifts that will bring the family together.
And Matt, have you seen the Guess Who where you create your own pictures and you have pictures of, say, family members or neighbors, and you make your own pictures, and then you can add those into the Guess Who?
No, I didn't. No. That's a thing. Okay, I'm Googling it right now. That's going under the stocking.
You can definitely do that and swap out those pictures and make it about your own, you know, larger family. Then the quest becomes a little bit different because you can ask questions about the actual people.
I love it. Absolutely love it.
Anything that you can do to bring your family together to create those memories, and it can be as simple as going on a winter wonderland walk, or you could bake something together or create a recipe together. We have smorgasbord nights in our house where everyone comes with something they want to make and we all make it together, and then we eat all these random foods together. Or we'll have like dress-up night at my house where everyone gets really dressed up and we bring out all the really nice, you know, plateware, and we drink out of wine glasses and, you know, juice out of wine glasses and fun things like that.
So now I need to just reference another tradition that I brought from the UK, and that's mince pies. So we make mince pies, and my wife has got really good at making the mince pies as well, and my eldest really enjoys it, and he enjoys eating them as well. And I think maybe I should just probably clarify while everyone's listening, going, yes, mince meat pies, but you don't really put meat in the pies anymore. So let's just be clear on that. The spices, I believe, if I'm right, were put in place to deal with the fact that the meat may have kind of gone off and wasn't very nice. But we've kind of progressed to the fact that the fruit and the spices that are in the mince pie is really the mince pie now. And they are absolutely awesome. And if the UK listeners, I'm sure, can relate, but if you haven't tried a mince pie before and you like baking, please, please go check it out, because I'm telling you, you are missing out on awesomeness during the holiday season.
I will have to get that recipe from you, Matt, so we can try it out with my family.
I'll send it over.
So let's talk now about some low-cost gifts that will help nurture children's creativity. Matt, what would you recommend?
Well, first of all, I want to expand this a little bit. I want to challenge us, Cindy, to not only recommend a gift, but also try and tag it to a previous episode of the Fueling Creativity podcast, right? That's a completely unfair request, listeners, because I've already thought about that and I'm putting Cindy on the spot with that. But The first thing that I would say from a low-cost option would be a bug box. So in our episode with Sally Reese, we was talking about how we might cultivate interests in our little ones, generate kind of like curiosity. I know we've also had an episode with Natalie Nixon where we spent time talking about how we might facilitate questioning. And one of the things that I did with my little ones and still continue to do is go on nature walks. But through that experience of nature walks, I've realized that a bug box is a super cool addition to bring on those walks. And we've caught toads in our bug boxes. We've caught grasshoppers. We've caught spiders. We've caught praying mantis. I mean, there's a whole bunch of praying mantis in the fall in Connecticut. And we don't keep them. We let them go. We've caught caterpillars. We have even kept a butterfly that has then turned into a chrysalis and then in the spring turned into a butterfly in our bug box. So we've got a whole bunch of different stories. The thing that makes it so great is that I've noticed the younger ones have always enjoyed carrying the bug box because they've got a sense of responsibility. When we've got the bug, we keep the bug in the box during our walk. So they're very careful, always checking on it. And then, of course, we sit around in a circle looking and describing the insect or bug or spider that we've caught. And it's just a wonderful experience. It adds to the nature walk. And so that would be my first gift that I would recommend that is relatively low cost. And you can buy a whole bunch on Amazon.
So here's my low cost recommendations. I love those tiles that are foam tiles that you can put together. I bought those for my kids when they were younger and they still use them a lot. And we bought probably 6 packs of them and they will turn them into forts. They will make inventions. They will make car slides. They will make all sorts of unusual things. They will make their own huts. They will hide in them for reading nooks. I'm just always amazed because they'll be in a pile. And then the kids I'll come downstairs and the whole basement, they'll have made a tunnel where they go through and they have to discover things through the tunnel, or they'll make a parkour where you have to go through an obstacle course in the basement. Of course, our basement is so messy that you don't really need to set up anything to try to parkour it. But I love those tiles. I love Zoobs. Are you familiar with Zoobs and Magnetiles, Matt?
Oh, Magnetiles, yes.
I love both Zoobs and Magnetiles because it just allows them to play with objects and manipulate objects and build things and try things out and use their imagination to create different things. And, you know, it really immerses them in this act of creation and building and constructing and thinking about how things work. So those are my recommendations for low-cost gifts.
And listen, Magnetiles can get sometimes on the expensive side, but you know, the one thing that I would say with those is that we bought our first set of Magnetiles when my eldest was, I think, 5. And just this month, he went and took them all out and built this whole huge world that was kind of like gobbled up by a tsunami, and he's now 10. So those Magnetiles, you know, are probably, I would say, the most played with toy, maybe in comparison with Legos, that we've had over the 5-6 years. So we bought them once, we've kept them, they're great, and I would certainly recommend those. Before we move on, you haven't connected that to a past episode on the Fueling Creativity podcast.
You're right, I haven't. So let me do that for the next item I'd like to talk about. Now, do you remember when Sally Reese was talking about potentiality?
Yes.
We have to find interests and we have to find passion and purpose, or just even finding things that students are interested in learning about. We talked about that with Scott Barry Kaufman. So my next recommendation comes from watching and observing your children and listening to what they're interested in, and then finding something that they can learn more about and take a deeper dive. And I don't know if you're familiar with OutSchool, but OutSchool came out really about, a year before the pandemic. And they offer all sorts of classes from people around the world who are teaching different things. And you name it, if it's about insects or if it's about hip-hop dance or if it's about cooking, Harry Potter cooking. If your child is interested in it, there's probably a class they can take on it. And some of these classes are one-time classes, and some of them are multiple classes over the series of a, you know, semester. So I think this is a great way to dip into your child's interests and see what courses might be available for them. I love doing this with my kids. Is I'll go through and we'll look at all the range of courses they can take. My daughter has learned about cooking throughout school. And she actually helped us all become fans of kale chips because she made that in one of her cooking classes. So, and she's taken lots of interesting courses on Harry Potter, which she's interested in, caring for her dog. My son has taken courses in Latin, which he's really enjoyed. So you can find courses in just about anything on OutSchool. So I highly recommend, if you're interested in developing your child's potential in a particular area and interest, to check out OutSchool.
And while you've been talking, I just Googled OutSchool, and they've got a class this Saturday, November 27th, this December 4th, December 8th, going all the way through the holiday season on Pokemon. And my seven-year-old, we've got a big problem at the moment because he keeps taking his Pokemon cards to school, even though he's not allowed to. So I actually will be giving that gift early. And wow, awesome suggestion. Thanks so much for sharing.
So Matt, do you have something in the more moderate range for gifts?
I do. This gift has the potential to be in the moderate range, but just kind of like creeping up there a little bit in price. The specific gift that I'm going to reference, I think, ranges between $20 and $30 on Amazon.com. That particular gift is Boxer. Now, Boxer is a tiny little robot that you charge with a USB cable, and it responds to some very simple gestures and interactions from a child, anywhere from, I think, kind of 4 till maybe 6 or 7. It even is a robot that you can turn on its top and rub its belly, and it kind of does a kind of like giggle and a little shake. And the reason why I bring this up and connecting it to an episode of the Fueling Creativity podcast is the conversation we first had with Brian Alexander in the first season, and then another conversation that we had with Jonathan Nolder in the second season. And this idea of kind of like collaboration with robots, and Jonathan Nolder brought up the term cobots, and this idea of trying to teach our young children and students to become somewhat familiar and recognize and develop relationships with artificial intelligence. And the idea is that as we start transitioning to the workforce 10, 20, 30 years from now, a lot of creative production is going to be done in collaboration with machines. And so in some of those episodes, we had kind of thrown around a few different ideas of how we might get students to become more familiar with these types of AI interactions. And so that's why I was kind of thinking along the lines of some type of robot. There's a whole different collection of robots. I'm referencing Boxer because I think it's particularly good for young children. But of course, we've got Lego Mindstorms, which gets pretty up in price. But then we've also got things like the Dash and Dot. And there's a whole bunch of different options there. The main thing that I would get parents to think about is quite often that the more expensive range robots center around programming, which isn't a bad thing per se. But the reason why I'm suggesting this in this show is just to kind of facilitate interaction, awareness of potential interactions with machines as we progress later in life.
Ooh, that sounds like fun. And I'm going to build on that with a higher end object, which is a toy box. Have you heard of Toy Box, Matt?
No.
So ToyBox is a toy 3D printer. And because, you know, I'm in the creativity field, I'm always looking for objects that support creativity. And these toy boxes are about $249, so they are expensive. And we bought one for my son when they first came out, and I think he was about 7 or 8, and he had no interest in it. Like, we pulled it out, we had all this, you know, and it actually creates toys for you. And you can put a design into the program, and that's already sort of predetermined, and you pick the colors and then you make it, or you can design your own toys. So he started playing with it, and he didn't really have interest in it when he was that age. But when he turned around 11, 12, he became really interested. He pulled the box out and he's like, I really want to try designing my own toys. And he has some bobbleheads that he made us, some bobbleheads. We have bobbleheads of all of our families we made with the toy box. But then he started inventing things. And when he had an idea for an invention, or he saw a problem in, say, the wheel, in fact, this is funny, the wheel of my husband's suitcase didn't work properly. He's like, Mom, I think I can fix this with Toy Box. So he went and he designed a piece of material that would help fix the wheel and get it unstuck. And he had to do probably 15 different iterations of it, but he got it at the end. And he's designed his own ideas for holding ski poles as you go up the ski hill through Toy Box. And he's created his own prototypes. And it's just been a really interesting item that has really grown with him and how he uses it. And actually, he did a design on antibodies last year for school, and he created his own antibodies with the Toy Box. And the teacher said, "Did you buy these from somewhere?" And he said, "No, I designed them myself," which was, you know, proud mom moment, right? So I think it's great if that's something that you can afford. Like I said, it's on the higher end, but it has sustained through years of interest. And I think it's a really interesting piece if you have a little inventor in your family. So I've been talking a lot about my son, but there is something I bought for my daughter that I would love to share with you because I'm so excited about it. I found this on Uncommon Goods, which I will link to in our notes, and it is a necklace that is broken glass. And I was actually going through this catalog with my daughter, and I said, "Oh, look at this necklace. It's a broken glass. Do you know what that means?" And she's like, "Yeah, Mom, that's about, you know, women who have crushed it." And, you know, cracking glass, it symbolizes this milestone breakthroughs achieved by the women of the past and present and the future. So I bought her one of these necklaces. They're $68 as her big holiday gift, as a reminder that she can break the glass and she can shatter, you know, her own paradigms of what she imagines for herself.
And now I kind of feel bad because, you know, my big gift is probably significantly more than $68. I mean, it is a large gift. And I definitely think that some research should be conducted. I'll put a link to my toy in the notes. But I purchased a telescope about 6-7 years ago. And let's be clear, the telescope was a little bit for me as well as the family. But if we go back to what we said about quality time at the very beginning, the telescope has brought us together. Now, if I was to go back and do it again, I probably would be a lot more conscious of the eyepiece and how easy it is for young children to kind of focus in on the moon. But it nevertheless, it has kind of like brought our family together on kind of like those really nice, crisp, clear evenings where the moon is so bright and in the sky and we kind of stare up at the moon. I've even found ways of taking pictures of the moon with my cell phone. And it again connects to, like, you know, the questions that are raised, the getting curious about the space. And I typically accompany those experiences with one of those sky apps. So if you don't know about it, you've got those sky apps where you can kind of like put the phone up and it tells you what stars you're looking at. And it's just kind of like it. I have to say, I can't sit here and say those experiences go on for 30-40 minutes, but they're about 15-20 minutes of what I would say is just a kind of like lots of questions and wondering about our universe. And it's a really, really great experience. So that would be my big, big expensive gift. But I, again, want to be clear, I'm not an expert. I'm not recommending a telescope. And in fact, I'm recommending that you conduct some research before you making the purchase.
Excellent. Well, we hope you have a wonderful holiday season. This season is not over of the Fueling Creativity podcast. We still have several more episodes to go, but we wanted to provide this for you in hopes that you will find the information we share useful and interesting.
Well, Cindy, I'll take us away because I think that we're starting to build that as the kind of routine for the bonus episode. So we are wishing everyone a happy holiday season, however you celebrate with your family. And my name is Dr. Matthew Werwood.
And my name is Dr. Cindy Burnett. This show was produced by Creativity and Education and in partnership with TeachersInnovationStudio.com.